Hello, everyone. Good evening. This is Turd Flingy Monkey. Welcome to this extra special episode of the TFM 420 because I can't stream tonight. My VPN isn't working, and because my VPN isn't working, I just can't stream. In case you don't know, when you live stream, you broadcast your IP address. It's very, very important that you use a VPN if you plan on live streaming. You can upload stuff without a VPN, but you never want to live stream without a VPN. And unfortunately for me, my VPN decided it didn't want to connect. I tried resetting it. I tried resetting my entire computer. My internet is working fine. The VPN isn't working. I emailed AMR. Hopefully something, but it is what it is. So in lieu of that, I thought I would just talk about what I wanted to talk about. I do have like a super chat, and I have a couple super chats from the last stream that I missed because they were in entropy, and I'll answer those, and I'll just upload this as is. So this isn't live stream. This isn't going out anywhere because I don't have a working VPN. So also because of that, I'm really not making anything on this stream. So if you will indulge me, I'm going to show my newsletter to maybe entice you to support me on Subscribestar and GiveSendBro. So before I get to the actual sponsors, let me indulge me for a moment. Okay, so this is from Subscribestar, okay? This is the Monkey's Market Minute. And I just want to give you like a preview of what it looks like. So the Monkey's Market Minute is my geopolitical and financial newsletter. I publish it 4 times a week. It's a supplement to what I talk about on the show. So if you want to see kind of what's going on throughout the week and my thoughts about what's going on, support me on Subscribestar or GiveSendBro for $5 a month and you get access to this newsletter. And as you can see, I start out with market news, not really going into crazy amounts of detail, but just like my thoughts and feelings on the news of the day, and I provide sources. Then I go into the winners and losers for the market that day, and then I switch over to geopolitical news. And this is something I bring to the table that very few people do. Most people specialize in either economics, finance, or they're geopolitical commentators and analysts. I'm all of those things. I have a background in military intelligence, economics, finance, investments. I'm just kind of a jack of all traits, master of not none, though. I actually do know what I'm talking about. So anyway, we have our geopolitical news. And then, let me scroll down. Then you get a picture of Celestina. It's AI generated. It's not like a sex doll or anything. It's just a nice, tasteful Celestina AI generated pic. I generate about 50 a day, and you get the best of the best. So that's Celestina's pick of the day. And there is an audio version. So below the Celestina pick of the day, you can just click this play button and I will read you the newsletter in my own lispy voice. That way you get the full experience. So, you know, if you like my content, but you wish I streamed more or put out more daily content, I do. But I do it through this newsletter and you do get an audio file. So there's no like, you know, there's no visual to go with it, but it is pretty cool. All right, so all of that is done. Let's go back to me. So again, since I'm not making anything on this pseudo live stream, since I can't stream because my VPN isn't working, I would appreciate it if you would support me on Subscribestar or GiveSendBro. That way, you know, at least I got something out of this content. Anyway, all right, our normal sponsors. Let me give some credence to our normal sponsors. Our normal sponsors are the Dollhouse, Aravenus. And because this is the Wednesday show, let me switch over to the Saturday show to get the proper sponsors. So give me 1 second. I know this is very unprofessional. You get used to it. All right. So, you know what? I forgot to take down the gaming thing. There we go. All right. So our sponsors are the Dollhouse, Aravenus, MetWeb, which I don't really feel like shilling right now since their shit's not working. And then Revy Consulting and SpinningRobotPussy.com. So there you go. There is our sponsors. All right. There we go. All right. Let's jump back over to the proper scene, and then we will get into what I am going to talk about. All right. I do have some super chats from, you know, a stream ago, and there's one super chat that came in that I'll talk about. But other than that, there is some stuff to talk about. All right. If you've been paying attention, the crypto space blew the fuck up on Friday, and it continued to blow up today. A lot of people are attributing this to Trump tweeting about massive tariffs on China. And, the trade war is back on. And that's what caused the dump. And while that is significant, that's not... Because if that were the case, so Trump said, China's playing hardball. We're going to step it up, 100% tariffs and all this other shit, right? And he said he's canceling the meeting. He's not going to meet with Xi. He backed off. As soon as the market started crashing, Trump backed off and said he is going to meet with Xi. And, this could get worked out. And the markets didn't recover. This is extremely significant. It's not the Trump tweet that caused the markets to crash. What actually happened that caused crypto to dump and caused this huge market sell-off on Friday, which happened like around the time like the markets were closing? It mostly affected crypto because when the markets are closed, the crypto markets remain open. So like come Monday, you're going to see some serious shit. But, you know, while it's the weekend, only the crypto markets are open. So only the crypto markets are affected. But what actually is going on? What's happening is China announced export controls on various rare earths, which are vital to not just electric vehicles, but missiles, semiconductors, like a whole bunch of shit, which is going to cripple America's ability to make missiles and semiconductors, which directly affects the AI sector. This even affects Taiwan, because it's not just against the United States. This is against everyone. Taiwan, which is the number one maker of semiconductors in the world, they rely on raw materials and rare earths from China. And China is not going to export to Taiwan if those semiconductors are going to be sold to anything having to do with the military or anything like that. This is directly crippling America's ability to make missiles, AI, all that shit. This is a fucking stake through the heart of not just the AI bubble, but all of America's wars. Because America's trying to step up their ability to make missiles. Like Israel desperately needs more air defense missiles in order to launch their war against Iran. We're gearing up for war against Venezuela. We don't have any fucking missiles. And we can't build them because China controls the entire supply chain when it comes to rare earths. And it's very important to know, rare earths minerals aren't that rare. All right, we have rare earths in America. There are rare earth minerals throughout the world. The problem isn't, you know, the mining the rare earth. It's refining the rare earths into a usable form for industrial use. Mining is the least of the worries. The hardest thing is refining them because it destroys water, it destroys farmland. It's a very environmentally destructive process, very chemically heavy. And nobody wants to do this other than China. China controls the rare earth market because nobody else wants to do the kind of environmental damage that China does by refining these rare earths. We could find, like, there's rare earths all over the world, right? They're not that rare. But the process of turning those rare earths into a usable form is extremely environmentally damaging, which is why no one wants to do it. We could theoretically tell the environmentalists to eat a dick and tell all the boomers that, fuck you and your NIMBY, we're going to build these rare earth refining plants, and it's going to destroy the environment. All your real estate in the area is going to shit the bed and go fuck yourself because this is a matter of national security. We could do that, but we're not going to do that. There's no way in hell we're going to tell the environmentalists and the boomers to go fuck themselves. In fact, right now, I saw this, the governor of Florida, he's talking about ending property taxes. Why? Because the fucking boomers. So another fun fact, if you didn't know, Florida is a no-fault state when it comes to auto accidents. So if you get into an auto accident in Florida, it's a no-fault state. Now, what does this have to do with anything? It's because there's so many old people who live in Florida. Florida is like the retirement destination for the entire United States. Everybody wants to retire in Florida. So it's full of boomers, like out the ass boomers as far as the eye can see. And so the boomers, they get into a lot of auto accidents because they're old and, you know, their depth perception isn't what it used to be and their reaction time isn't what it used to be. So they get into a lot of auto accidents. So the state of Florida is a no-fault state in order to basically make the boomers have a better time while they're causing traffic accidents. And now the boomers, they've watched their real estate double, triple, and a lot of them are on fixed income. They're not making any additional income. They're on fixed income, but now their property taxes have doubled or tripled and they can't afford to live in their home. So they're reaching out, and the boomers are very powerful, especially in Florida. And now Florida is going to abolish the property taxes as another hookup to the boomers. Now, what does that have to do with anything? It's very simple. I'm just using Florida as an example of how powerful boomers are politically. They have nothing better to do than to be intimately involved in the political process. This is why Social Security, Medicare are completely untouchable, even though they are the central problems in our spending. We cannot do anything about the massive government spending if we refuse to do anything about Social Security and Medicare, because the boomers are so politically active, so organized. They have literally nothing more important to do than to protest or rally or whatever. And so whatever they touch is political radioactive waste. And I know this intimately because I was involved in the Tea Party way back in the day, way back when, like, Obama was president, okay? And we were protesting. Actually, it started with George W. Bush. George W. Bush was bailing out all these banks during the housing bubble, and people were protesting that. And then when Obama came in, he extended the bailouts, and you had this whole Occupy Wall Street shit. Remember all that? Remember that? So there's a thing called the Tea Party at the time, and it's supposed to be about tax enough already. We didn't want our taxes raised to bail out banks that made shitty loans. And then the boomers joined the Tea Party, but they didn't join the Tea Party to cut government spending or to protest the bank bailouts. They joined the Tea Party because they were worried about Obamacare affecting their Medicare. And all these boomers, and they quadrupled the size of the Tea Party. The Tea Party was a very small fringe libertarian movement. No one was really talking about it. When the boomers joined, it quadrupled in size and it became a major national player. But it stopped being about, you know, taxed enough already and cut. It was just a bunch of boomers trying to make sure that their Medicare didn't get touched. And as soon as Obamacare was passed, but Medicare was spared, all the boomers left and the Tea Party disintegrated. And I'm telling you all of this just to show you how powerful and active the boomers are. Now, we talk a lot about Israel and how powerful AIPAC is, and AIPAC is powerful, but you need to understand Jews are 2% of the population. They have a lot of money, they have a lot of connections, but they can't really turn out the vote. They're 2% of the population. They could donate to your campaign, but they can't get you elected on their own. There just aren't enough Jews. The boomers are a huge cohort, and they're extremely politically active. They'll not just vote for you, they will get everyone to vote for you, and they will turn up to every rally, every protest in mass with handmade signs, and the media is extremely sympathetic to the elderly. When you have the elderly on your side of that political debate just becomes more sympathetic by default, because who doesn't feel sorry for old people who are suffering, right? Like, you look at young, you know, working people versus helpless old people, who are you going to feel sorry for? So what I'm saying is, that's why we can't refine rare earths in the United States or anywhere in the West, because of NIMBY shit and because of the power of the boomers and the environment. The environmentalists are frankly the less restrictive party. The environmentalists, you know, we could deal with the environmentalists. We could tell the environmentalists to eat a dick. We can't tell the boomers to eat a dick. Like, we're going bankrupt. We're spending close to $2 trillion in interest on the national debt. Despite all the revenue the tariffs are bringing in, the tariffs are bringing in hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue, and it's not enough. We're still running deficits. We are still running deficits despite hundreds of billions of dollars in additional revenue due to the tariffs. It's not enough. Why? Because of Social Security and Medicare. That's why. We can't do anything about our spending because of Social Security and Medicare, period. That is why we will never refine rare earths, because it will come at the direct expense of the biggest cohort, which is responsible for every, like, we could blame Israel and the Jews and AIPAC all day long, but again, they're 2% of the population. The boomers are the biggest fucking problem by numbers, by sheer numbers. Maybe not per capita, but by sheer numbers, the boomers are the biggest fucking problem in this country. And we literally have to wait for them to die before we can solve anything. It's fucking ridiculous. But if you're wondering why China owns the entire supply chain of rare earths, that's why. It's because of boomers. We could, you know, process rare earths, but it would completely tank the real estate market in the areas we built those facilities. And the NIMBY dipshits won't allow it. Because the problem is, you know, you want to process them and then you want to, you know, process them where they're going to be used. You don't want to process them and ship them all around the country. We could conceivably build facilities in the middle of the desert, you know, where they won't taint waterways and they won't do this, but that'll be very expensive to ship. You know, like all that additional shipment. I mean, I don't know. It's feasible, I suppose, but I doubt it. Anyway, and even if we did that, it would take years we don't have. Now, what happened? Why did China do this? So the regime has been banking on China always being reactive, not proactive. America, you know, does embargoes on Chinese, you know, semiconductors and Chinese AI chips to try to, you know, keep the Chinese economy down and trying to prevent China from competing with the West when it comes to technology and AI. And China just takes it on the chin. China might do a little quid pro quo, but then, you know, but here's the key is China's always reactive. America's the aggressor, and then China reacts. But China never instigates. China never presses the offensive. China only reacts what America does. So America can basically control what China does. And, you know, by, you know, they back off a bit, then China backs off a bit. They aggress a little bit, maybe China aggresses a little bit, but they're always reactive. In this case, China was not reactive. They were being proactive. This export ban on rare earths that directly affects the AI industry, but more importantly, the American ability to manufacture missiles. This was unexpected by the regime, completely unexpected. Because they were banking on China just sitting there twiddling its thumbs, allowing them to get all the rare earths from China they needed, build up their missile supply, destroy Iran, destroy Russia, destroy Venezuela, you know, and then maybe then they go after China with the missiles that they built with China's help. That's the plan. And China would never do anything because, you know, they value their business with America too much. Well, China just proved they don't care. Now, think about this. China never acts impulsively. They never act emotionally. They never provoke. They never aggress unnecessarily. The fact that China would take this step actually is kind of surprising. I actually did not see this coming. Now, but here's where this kind of makes sense. So America is gearing up for war against both Venezuela and Iran. Now, Russia and China are helping Iran as much as they can. There's Russian and Chinese weapons and defenses pouring into Iran to prepare for the inevitable war with Israel, as I predicted, because Israel is the head of the snake as far as the regime is concerned, and China and Russia know it. And like, but more importantly, and this will also relate to Venezuela. Iran is a very important partner in BRICS. They've signed agreements with China, Russia, and other BRICS countries. Countries are only joining BRICS because they perceive BRICS to be the strong horse. No one wants to be on the losing side in a shifting geopolitical landscape. But if Russia and China just sit around with their thumb up their ass while America overthrows their partners' governments and they don't do anything, well, then it makes Russia, it makes an alliance with Russia and China meaningless. Like, if you join BRICS and you sign all these defensive and strategic partnerships with Russia and China, and then America comes and overthrows you and Russia and China don't do anything, then what was the point of joining BRICS? Why would you join BRICS, jeopardize your country, you know, with all, and, you know, it doesn't matter if you sign all these partnerships, but the, your partners don't have your back when you need them most, then there's no point joining BRICS at all. And this is why the war with Venezuela is going to happen. So Russia and China are helping Iran. Now, helping Iran isn't that hard for Russia and China because Iran is in Asia. Venezuela is in South America. It's on the other side of the world. Very hard to get stuff there because, unlike the United States, Russia and China don't have force projection. They don't have hundreds of military bases all over the world the way the United States does. And what the United States is going to do is they're going to overthrow the government of Venezuela to basically send the signal that all these partnerships that Venezuela has entered into regarding Russia and China, all the plans these countries have formed, they don't mean anything. You know, signing partnerships with Russia and China is no guarantee because we will come and we will overthrow you and Russia and China can't stop us. And so because that being the case, you should not enter into a partnership with Russia or China or BRICS because it will only spell your doom. If you recall, there was no talk of overthrowing Venezuela. In fact, there was talk of normalizing relations with Venezuela, particularly if you remember a couple years ago when oil prices were spiking. There was all this talk of like renewing relations with Venezuela, dropping sanctions, all these things because, you know, we needed more oil supply because oil prices were high because of the war in Ukraine. Remember that? Nothing has changed. Venezuela isn't doing anything. They're certainly not behind. They're certainly not aren't narco terrorists. What's happening is Venezuela is trying to join BRICS. That's what this is about. They petitioned to join BRICS in 2024. Brazil blocked them. But here's the problem. Brazil now realizes that they're next. If Venezuela is overthrown for joining BRICS, well, Brazil is basically the beachfront of BRICS in South America. Brazil will be targeted for regime change after America's done with Venezuela because the regime does not want BRICS in their hemisphere. They want to drive BRICS out of the hemisphere where they can control North and South America, and they want everyone to be their vassal. And so Brazil is, you know, there's some movement of like mending relations with Venezuela. They don't like each other, just like, you know, Sunnis and Shias don't like each other. But because of, you know, the strong horse, you know, OPEC did join BRICS alongside Iran and along, you know, these hated enemies did join BRICS together. The point is this war with BRICS is coming to South America. Starting with Venezuela, not because they did anything to deserve it, but because they're the weakest, lowest hanging fruit. They're going for the weakest, lowest hanging fruit. And the goal is to overthrow Venezuela. China and Russia won't do anything. Therefore, it shows how weak BRICS is and how America is still number one. Similar to what happened in Syria. Overthrow the government. Russia and China can't stop us. Ha ha ha. We're still number one. That kind of thing. That's the goal. Now, what can Russia do? Well, not much. You know, Russia's helping Iran strengthen their defenses. They're fighting a war in Ukraine. There's only so much they can do. They don't have the force projection that the United States does. They don't have military bases all over the world where they can defend all their allies. They could put Russian troops in Venezuela as like a tripwire. Whereas, like, if you go to war with Venezuela, you know, you're going to go to war with Russia, and that'll be World War III. You know, will they do that? I don't know. That would be considered a provocation by the U.S. But, you know, at this point, like, war is inevitable. Like, the regime doesn't want World War III. They don't want a nuclear war. Nobody wants a nuclear war. But the regime is trying to put some points on the board. They haven't been putting any points on the board recently, and they want to show they're strong against Russia and China.
And they're actually, it's not outside of the realm of possibility that Russia puts troops in Venezuela as a tripwire to threaten World War III if America attacks Venezuela, similarly to how they ended the war against Iran by tweeting that they would, well, not they, but Iran would be given a nuclear warhead if they were attacked by Israel and the United States. So it's not outside the realm of possibility, but it would mean bringing us to the edge of World War III. But that's always been the plan. The regime can't win against BRICS. They have to escalate in order to de-escalate. They have to bring BRICS to the precipice of World War III in the hope that Russia and China will cuck and let them win and negotiate when they're losing on all fronts. That's what the regime's plan is. And so that's what the war in Venezuela is about. That's what this war with Iran is about. And that's what I believe these export controls from China are. China's not aggressing against America militarily. And they have plausible deniability because, you know, these export controls have legitimate reasons for their existence. But this directly harms both America's AI sector, which is holding up the markets and the economy, and it's directly attacking America's ability to build missiles in a time when they're running out of missiles and desperately trying to build as many as quickly as possible. And these export controls denying America the ability to have the rare earth minerals they need for the semiconductors in order to, you know, run these missiles is going to directly harm their ability to wage these wars against BRICS, which is extremely smart of China to do, which is why Donald Trump issued that angry tweet. Because this was an unforeseen, I've heard people talk, China's weaponizing, like China's just responding. They're not reacting anymore. China's now responding to the regime's relentless multi-front attacks against BRICS. Like, we're in a Cold War against BRICS. Anyone denying that is stupid. China's been playing kind of the behind-the-scenes role, not trying to provoke and whatever. And the regime's been taking advantage of that. And now China's actually made a move. Now they're attacking America's ability to build missiles and attacking the whole AI sector by preventing semiconductors to be exported or even manufactured, because you need rare earths to manufacture these semiconductors. And China controls the supply chain because no one wants to process these rare earths and, you know, cause the environmental damage that is necessary to do so. Anyway, that's what's happening. And so the Trump tweet was the trigger that but the trade war isn't the problem. The problem is these rare earth export bans and these rare earth export controls will destroy America's ability to build missiles and the AI sector in one fell swoop. And so Trump is like, you know, he's flipping his shit talking about, you know, 160% tariffs. But there's nothing he can do. Like, he doesn't have any leverage over China. The Chinese economy is doing fine. People talking about, oh, if we do these tariffs, we're going to cripple it. No, they won't. Every single time there's been a trade war, Trump backs down. China's got this. They've been preparing for this for years. Like, this is like the third time Trump has threatened a trade war with China. And it's always Trump that blinks. It's all bullshit. The markets are on a razor's edge. And the reason why the sell-off happened in crypto, it's not because of the Trump tweet per se. It's because of what this means. This is the end of the AI bubble. This is also the end of the regime's ability to rearm itself. And even if it decided in the name of national security, they're going to start building facilities and processing rare earths, it would take years to do so. Years. They have to build the facility. Like, these aren't like an AI, you know, widget you can just, you know, create in a day. You know, these are physical foundries to process rare earths that will do incalculable environmental damage. And so there's a whole bunch of environmental protection laws, all the fucking, the greens and the hippies, everyone will fucking flip their shit and they will fight this in court. So you're going to be tied up in legal shenanigans for years to try to get these things approved just to break ground on them. And then it'll take you years to build them, train the personnel before you can even process any of the rare earths. This is years the regime simply does not have. And they were not counting on China actually doing anything aggressive. They were counting on China continually reacting and playing defensive and being restrained and allowing the regime to launch these multi-front wars with the indirect help of China while they do it. And China decided now is the time. America's basically overextended. They're bankrupt. They're out of missiles. And we have them by the fucking balls. And China decided to squeeze. And Trump flipped his shit and crypto crashed. And people were like, oh, crypto didn't crash that much. Like, you have no idea what a crash looks like. Crashes don't happen in a 24-hour, even 48-hour period. Crashes happen over a matter of weeks and months. And, like, there's nothing Trump can do to fix this other than back off, which he can't do. There's been some talk, like I know Netanyahu sent a message to Iran through Putin during their phone call where Israel says they don't want war. And that's a fucking lie. I bet you anything. Israel doesn't have a choice. They need to launch a war against Iran now. But nobody trusts a goddamn thing Israel says. They're certainly not going to trust any diplomatic gestures. So not after what happened before. So Israel's, they're trying to set Iran up for another decapitation strike, but they've kind of already burned those assets. Like, nobody trusts them. Nobody's going to let their guard down around them. So they're just trying to get something going, but they fucked up. Like I said, the Greater Israel fucking project died during the first 12-day war with Iran. That was the end of the Greater Israel project. They're just trying to keep this going. They're trying to extend this. They're losing in Ukraine. They're losing. They lost in Iran. They can't even beat the fucking Houthis. They're fucked. They're so fucked. And now they're trying to pivot to attacking Venezuela to try to gain some momentum by attacking a relatively weak country in their backyard that has very little in the way of, you know, modern military equipment to speak of. They're pretty much on par with Syria. Not as bad, but very close, very similar. So they're going to overthrow Venezuela on very flimsy charges of being narco-terrorists, which they're not. It's complete bullshit. It's just to stop BRICS's expansion into South America. They want to make sure that they keep the Americas under their thumb, which would have been far... I predicted Trump would do this when he first took office. I thought he was going to end the war in Ukraine, you know, not suck Israel's dick for 6 months. Focus on the Americas, you know, get Greenland, get the Panama Canal, you know, get BRICS out of South America. There you go. The problem is now that he's lost to Iran, now that he's continued to lose in Ukraine, the regime is looking weaker by the day. And so now launching this Venezuelan war looks less like America refocusing its efforts. It looks more like a desperation move, which it is. And while China can't intervene militarily and Russia can't intervene militarily because they don't have the resources, they're already fighting a proxy war against NATO. They're basically fighting the regime already directly and indirectly by helping Iran and by fighting NATO directly in Ukraine. They can't help Venezuela. So China is helping Venezuela by attacking America's ability to make missiles because that's all America can do. America's not going to send ground troops. They're going to do airstrikes. That's all they fucking know how to do. But basically, America needs air defense missiles and they need bombs to drop in their airstrikes. So basically, this is a war of drones and air defense missiles. And so China controlling the rare earth minerals, they can share all those rare earths with all their trading partners while restricting the entire West from obtaining these rare earths. Because it's not, again, rare earth minerals themselves aren't that rare, but the refined processed rare earths that are necessary to build these weapons are rare, and China controls the whole goddamn supply chain. So this is really, really bad for the regime. And they did not see this coming because they did not expect China to take any aggressive, proactive steps. And that's why everything's crashing. And even if Trump announces, I'm not canceling the talks. I'm going to meet with China. Blah, blah. Unless he signals he's backing down and China reciprocates, this is only going to get worse. Because, again, these export controls don't just affect the regime's ability to make missiles. This also directly affects semiconductors, which are crucial to making AI chips, which is crucial for the entire AI sector. No semiconductors means no NVIDIA chips. No NVIDIA chips means no AI bubble. No AI bubble means no market, which means no economy, which means BRICS wins. I mean, BRICS has already won. They have the regime by the balls. So it's kind of sort of over. There's probably going to be bailouts and bullshit. And people are predicting, the Fed's going to cut rates because of this. They're going to cut rates to stabilize the markets, to, you know, reinflate the bubble. So everybody's buying the dip. But do not buy the dip, okay? Like, you just got a taste of how fragile the markets are. And they're not going to get, like, lowering interest rates into stagflation is not going to fix anything. So anyway, that's what's going on. It is quite the shit show. But I'm actually genuinely surprised that China, when I say went on the offensive, they're not like militarily going on the offensive. They're going on the offensive economically, which they haven't done before. They've always reacted to Trump's provocations. Trump's the one who instituted the tariffs. It wasn't China. Trump's the one who is trying to, they're the ones punishing China, preventing China from obtaining technology to build their own AI chips, try to maintain Western control of the tech sector. That's all been the Americans provoking China. China, and again, just like with Russia, China's fine just running out the clock. They don't want to provoke America. They don't want World War III. They're fine running out the clock. But I think what they realized, I don't know. I don't have a fly on the wall, but I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes. They're seeing the regime extend itself in multiple wars, in multiple continents. They're running out of missiles. They're out of missiles, essentially. They're desperately trying to build missiles as quickly as possible. And they're overextended. And all these wars, at the end of the day, China knows that they're on the list. Once Venezuela falls, Brazil is next in South America. If Iran falls, Russia is next in Asia. But if Iran and Russia fall, China is next. If Venezuela and Brazil fall, they're going to continue to go after BRICS. And right now, BRICS is still growing because it has momentum. If they lose momentum, if the regime starts, overthrowing governments and punishing them for joining BRICS, and Russia and China can't stop them, you're going to see momentum reverse. Countries are going to start leaving BRICS under the threat of America invading them and overthrowing their governments. And if Russia and China can't stop them, if Russia and China can't soothe the fears of these countries who want to join BRICS, they want to see the multipolar world. But if that's going to mean America invades them or bombs them or overthrows their government, or does a color revolution, which is what's going to happen in Venezuela, if Russia and China can't stop them and have their back, then it's not worth it to join BRICS, even though they want to, because they don't want to provoke the United States to come in with their military and overthrow their government. And if their allies can't be there for them, then it doesn't make any sense to join BRICS. You might as well just stay as one of the regime's vassals, because at least your country will be left alone. And, maybe in time, as America becomes weaker and BRICS becomes stronger, that dynamic will change and then they can finally join. But in the meantime, they don't want to be overthrown. So you can't blame them. I think China sees that. For BRICS to survive and for the Belt and Road Initiative to survive and for them to survive, like, again, if BRICS fails, if Iran and Russia fall, China is next. So I think China just decided now is the time. They've ran the numbers. They did the math. They checked their math twice. And they decided that now's the time to start going on the offensive. Maybe not militarily, but economically. And so these export controls are extremely significant. This harms the military-industrial complex directly. And this basically will destroy the AI bubble, because this will prevent Taiwan from developing the semiconductors that NVIDIA debt. They need the Taiwanese semiconductors. They cannot build their chips without them. And Taiwan can't build their semiconductors without China. And China controls the rare earth supply chain. So they have the AI sector by the balls. They have the military industrial complex by the balls. Now, all Trump has to do is back off. But that means the end of the regime. That means ending the wars, sitting down with Russia and China, working out a new framework, accepting the multipolar world, blah, 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 that old shit. And that's not going to happen. I guarantee you that's not going to happen because of Israel. They need to attack it. They need to attack Iran. They don't know how yet, but they somehow need to figure it out. And there's no way for them to do that if they negotiate. So this is kind of the beginning of the end. I honestly, like, I don't see Russia or China cucking. We'll see if Israel actually attacks Iran, we'll see how that goes. Ultimately, I don't believe the regime is going to admit defeat and negotiate. I think the regime will have to be defeated on the battlefield, whether that's in Iran or whether that's in Venezuela. I think they're going to have to be defeated on the battlefield. Now, Venezuela, very unlikely to defeat America militarily. They don't have the military assets. Russia and China can't really provide them with the military assets. Venezuela is kind of fucked, which is why they're being targeted right now. Basically, America's looking for an easy win. There isn't a lot Russia and China can do. We're probably looking at another Syria in Venezuela. Russia could, again, put troops in Venezuela as a tripwire and threaten World War III, but that would be very unlike Russia to do. We'll see. I'm sure, like, you know, Putin, he knows what he's doing. We'll see what's going on. But, like, the regime is getting more and more desperate, obviously. And Russia and China, while they would love to run out the clock, the regime is getting more and more desperate and aggressive as they see the clock running out, which is what you'd expect. The clock is running out for the regime. Russia and China are hoping to run out the clock without a war. The regime is desperately trying to, you know, turn the wars around so that, you know, they don't run out of time. How will this end? I don't know. If I were a betting man, I would bet on Venezuela being attacked. I don't think Russia and China will intervene. I don't think they will instigate World War III over Venezuela for the same reason they did not instigate World War III over Palestine. You know, what Israel was doing to Gaza was pretty horrific, but that wasn't Russia and China's priority. Their priority is to their own people. And the Venezuelans, but unlike Palestine, this is different. Gaza was never in talks of joining BRICS. Gaza was never in talks of, you know, a strategic alliance or a trade partnership with BRICS or Russia or China. Gaza were just the victims of an Israeli, you know, genocide campaign. And, you know, it is what it is. Very horrific. But that's not BRICS' responsibility to be the world police and stop a genocide anymore. Like, there's genocides happening in Africa. Doesn't make it our responsibility to stop. It's not our fucking business. And what's happening in Gaza, it wasn't BRICS' business. But Venezuela is BRICS' business. Because Venezuela does have partnerships with Russia and China. They are actively trying to join BRICS. They were blocked last year by Brazil, but I think Brazil is realizing that they're on the chopping block too, just like China's realizing that the regime is, this is a war against BRICS. This is a war for global control, and America does not want to give up global control. They don't like to see the rise of BRICS. They don't want to see the multipolar world. It may be inevitable, but they're going to rage against the dying of the light and provoke World War III if they have to try to hold on to what power they can. And, you know, it is what it is. So that's what's going on. So next week, don't expect a relief rally. And even if the Fed cuts rates, that's not going to do anything. Now, the markets could rally based on fucking bullshit. You know, like, there is the chance of market manipulation. But I don't know. Like, the thing is there are people, like, first of all, I saw reports, thousands of fucking these crypto people had killed themselves in the last couple days. Thousands of people have killed themselves because they lost everything in the last 48 hours. Everything. All their positions, like their forced liquidations, completely wiped out because they were, you know, investing in crypto and they had leverage. And the thing is, this is why you don't mess around with leverage. If you mess around with leverage and the markets go the opposite way, you will be forced to eat the loss. Like, if you go long, if you buy and hold and the markets go down, you can just wait to see if they recover. If you believe in the fundamentals, just wait and it'll recover. But when you have leverage, you have to sell. They will do what's called a margin call, where you have to settle your account by selling. And then if you don't, you know, if your investments have lost so much value that they're not worth enough to settle your account, they'll sue you. And you'll have to liquidate your personal belongings. You'll go completely penniless. You won't just lose the money you invested. You'll lose everything and become bankrupt. This is why people kill themselves. This is why you do not mess around with leverage. Don't go into debt buying investments. It's not a good idea. So anyway, this is not the end. In fact, I mean, Bitcoin is still over 100,000. You know, like if you look at the charts, yeah, we had a really huge, you know, crash, you know, in a very short period, like the biggest crash in crypto history for so short a period, but it's still over 100 grand. Like Bitcoin is still over $100,000. It hasn't crashed yet. What you saw in the last 48 hours, all these people killing themselves, that was a baby crash. The real crash happens when the AI bubble, which the AI bubble hasn't crashed either. But I want to point out something. During this huge meltdown in crypto and in the S&P, AI, like, because again, this rare earth export ban directly affects semiconductors, AI, and that's what caused the crypto crash. Gold did not go down. Gold gained. Do you see commodities, real wealth? So gold went up when the stock market and fucking crypto shit the bed. But you haven't even seen anything yet. Because right now, I guarantee you, Trump is scrambling. You know, Bessent, all the people, you know, priming the market right now. They're scrambling, trying to figure out what they can do to turn this around. They can't capitulate to China. They can't back off their wars. They have no leverage over China. They honestly don't really have any cards to play. They're kind of fucked. I'm actually genuinely curious what they do, because I don't see a way for them to fuck. Like, I think, and here's the thing, China's been very patient. When China decides to start acting, it's because they know they got you by the balls. You've walked right into their trap. You took them for granted. You let your guard down. You basically casually let them have you by the balls. Now they're going to squeeze. And that's what China's doing. And I don't really see a way out of this. Other than Trump making promises he fully intends to break and getting China and possibly Russia to back down and then betraying them later. That's the only, but at this point, after what happened in Iran and after the Minsk agreement, I don't think Russia and China are going to trust Trump. Any kind of deal Trump tries to make, I don't think they'll trust him. And so I don't even think that will work. I think the only thing they'll listen to is if Trump genuinely stops the aggression. He actually accepts defeat and takes the fucking L. But he can't do that because of Israel. He can't take the L now. He has to go to war with Iran. So I don't, like, I only see the regime doubling down. If Israel wasn't a player, maybe the regime could negotiate some type of settlement with BRICS and find like a place in the multipolar world. But with Israel in play and the war with Iran being demanded, I don't see how Trump pulls his ass out of this. I think it's fucked. We'll see. Next week, we will see what the markets do. When the markets open on Monday, you're probably going to see some panic selling. You're going to see a lot of, expect a lot of reports in the media how the panic is overblown and you should buy the dip and you know, the Fed promising this, that, and the other to stabilize markets. They're probably going to cut rates. Oh, they'll definitely cut rates. They're going to do everything they can to stabilize the markets. There might be some bailout, some QE. You know, you'll see the overnight repo facility blow up. You'll see all kinds of shit to keep them to try to tame the market, stabilize the market, calm everyone down. But at the end of the day, if the regime can't build missiles and NVIDIA can't build chips, that's it. That's fucking it. It's over. You're done, son. So we will see what happens. What can Trump do anything? Because he won't accept defeat and he won't back down. He could try to make promises that he intends on breaking, but nobody will trust him unless Russia and China trust him, despite all evidence, and basically buy Trump time to launch his war with Iran for no reason. Again, Russia and China are not going to let Iran be destroyed. Russia and China have plans for Iran. Iran is very prominent in the Belt and Road Initiative by China and in Russia's European trade loop, where they want to sell, you know, oil. It all goes through Iran. Iran is too important for BRICS to let fall. And let's not forget, they have strategic partnerships with Russia. So it's just not going to happen. Like, it's literally over. It's just a matter of if Russia and China didn't, if they weren't so confident that they were going to win and they weren't so confident they could run the clock out, World War III would have already started. It's just that Russia and China are fairly confident they could just outlast America and win the war without firing a shot. That's the only thing preventing hot war from breaking out. And the regime is trying to get something going, but I think it might be over. We'll see. We'll see what Trump is cooking. Frankly, just between you and me, what I've seen from his economic advisors and the things he's implemented so far have not been impressive. So if they have some super secret weapon that I can't fathom, then I will be very impressed, but I kind of sort of doubt it. I kind of sort of doubt that Trump and company have a super secret economic weapon that is just beyond my comprehension. I'm pretty sure they're fucked and they have no answer for this because China has them by the balls. And they can threaten tariffs and they could talk about this, that, and the other, but they don't have fucking shit when it comes to leverage on China. And the Chinese economy is doing fine. All that shit about, oh, China's collapsing, it was all bullshit. It always was. It always was bullshit. Russia's fine. China's fine. BRICS is growing. They're adding trading partners by the day. You're fucked. You're so fucked. The best thing you can do is tell Israel to go fuck themselves and actually cut a deal with BRICS. Before Israel cuts a deal with BRICS and betrays you, which is what I fully expect them to do. It might be a race to see who betrays who first. Will the regime cut Israel off, or will Israel betray the regime? We'll find out, but I don't know. I mean, like, I don't want nuclear war. I'm not cheering for nuclear war. I don't see a way for the regime to win at all. Best case scenario at this point is they launch a war against Venezuela. China and Russia don't do anything for some reason, and they halt momentum in BRICS and try to roll it back by making BRICS look weak. That's kind of all they got at this point. But now the problem is if they can't build missiles, every missile they use in an air campaign against Venezuela, which is a completely optional war that nobody's, there's no threat. Venezuela's not threatening anything. Venezuela poses no threat to anyone. They just want to do this to fuck with BRICS. But if they can't replenish their missiles, every missile they use in Venezuela is one less missile for Israel or for Ukraine for that matter, but mostly for it. Let's be real here. Israel is kind of the important one. So every missile used in Venezuela is one less missile for Israel. If Israel wants to go to war with Iran, Iran can fuck their shit up and they're going to have no air defense missiles. And if they can't replenish them because they don't have the rare earths to do so, they are so fucked. So fucked. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm genuinely curious what the regime's next move is, because it's not going to be acceptance. They're going to do some shit to double down. I don't know what. I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to do some bullshit. It's not going to work, but they're going to try, and I'm here for it. So there you go. There's your geopolitical update. Regarding crypto, it will probably recover. I don't know, like based on, so there's going to, I fully expect a lot of government action to stabilize the markets. I do expect crypto to recover. However, you need to understand, like, what you just saw in the last 48 hours was a taste. Notice how you'll see, if you do some research, you'll find reports on this. People couldn't even access their accounts during the crash. When the crash happens, your account will be locked out. You will not be able to do anything other than watch your money disappear. It's not going to be like, oh, and all your sell orders and your stop losses, that doesn't mean shit. Completely ignored, your accounts went to fucking zero and you lost everything. So you need to be aware of that. Like, if you want to play this bubble game thinking like, oh, I'll get out in time. I know how to read a chart and I'll look for the indicators. You just got a small taste of how that is not fucking possible. When the crash happens, it will happen suddenly. And only the people who like are really like basically who are committing insider trading will have any knowledge about what's going to happen. You, just Mr. Joe Blow guy looking at your fucking charts, you're going to have no idea. And when it happens, your account's going to be inaccessible as you watch all of your money disappear. And you're not going to be able to make it up. Like, when the actual crash happens, Bitcoin will not be six figures. Bitcoin, like, it's probably going to, like, in my prediction, like, I was anticipating it to go down back down to 10,000 more or less is what it's been adjusted for inflation. Now, I'm not sure what the inflation adjusted. Because look, Bitcoin does have some utility, right? Blockchain is a useful technology. So, you know, if you look at the trends, it's, you know, about 10,000 adjusted for inflation is kind of like what Bitcoin should be because it is still a useful crypto. The problem is, you know, it's 100,000 plus right now. So it is a long way to go. Basically, it's going to lose 90%, give or take, when all is said and done. All right, so if you saw your crypto holdings evaporate in the last 48 hours and you're thinking of buying the dip, getting back on that wagon, I just want you to know when the real crash happens, your shit's going to be gone forever, completely gone. And we've already seen like, you know, thousands of people kill themselves in the last 48 hours because they got completely wiped out. They lost all their money, millions of dollars. Fucking gone. Now, look, as much as I am really, really fucking annoyed at the cryptards, the years of them laughing and pointing and dancing around me, and I do want them to die. If you're a member of my audience, if you're a man going your own way, if you value freedom, I don't want you to die, even if you're a cryptard. I want you to learn your lesson and stop doubting me. Look, I can't time the market for shit. Okay, I can't see the future, but yeah, I know what a bubble looks like. This isn't my first rodeo. And I don't want you to kill yourself because you were over leveraged in crypto because you trusted the narrative and then everything shits the bed and then you lose everything and you kill yourself. I don't want that to happen. So, you know, think about it. Think about it. All right. That's kind of all I wanted to talk about. Pretty significant, important stuff. I didn't want to just skip the show entirely and just not talk about anything, but that's going to be it for me. Okay, I'm going to answer these super chats from the last stream that I didn't get to because they were in entropy. So we're going to answer these, and then we have a super chat that came in, which I will answer, and then we'll get out of here. Again, I'm not streaming this. I'm just recording this, and I'm going to upload it. But okay, let's talk about these super chats from last stream. All right, so part one of two and part two of two from Desm. Part one of two, I have $7,000 sitting in a checking account to pay my bills, earning no interest, and for a fun little game, I put $200 into Robinhood and bought random penny stocks from 15 cents a share to 25 cents a share. I know the bubble is going to pop one of these days, but do you think if I sell as soon as I profit a little bit, that this is a safe game to play? Would you sell once a stock is up a certain percentage? How would you play this game? Your thoughts. Okay. When it comes to your emergency fund, you should never invest that money. The only thing you should invest it in is a money market account. Money market accounts are paying basically, you know what, when the Fed says they're going to raise and lower interest rates, that's basically what money markets, they're talking about money markets, okay? So right now, money markets are paying about 4%. That's not bad. That's not nothing. It's not good, but it's not nothing. So you know, you got 4%, you're doing all right. Could you do better? Sure. There's different things you could buy to make a better investment, but you don't want to risk your emergency fund. Now, if you're talking about your investable assets, like right now I'm sitting entirely in cash in a money market account. I'm still earning interest. I'm not earning zero, but I'm certainly not, you know, earning, you know, crazy amounts of money. So where should you put your money if a money market account isn't good for you? So here's a thought experiment you need to think about. I want you to imagine you have a triangle with three corners. You have you have earning interest higher than inflation, okay? Earning interest higher than inflation. Then you have another corner of the triangle called safety, and you know, another corner of the triangle called liquidity. Liquidity means you can access the money. It's not tied up. You're not going to get penalized for touching it, that sort of thing. You could pick two, or you could pick one. Two, if you want to kind of split the baby and have a little bit of both, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. You cannot pick all three. There is no investment that is safe, liquid, and is paying interest higher than inflation at all. Doesn't exist. You can pick a safe, liquid investment. That's what a money market is. Safe and liquid equals money market. If you want safe but not liquid, you could get a bond ladder. You can get corporate bonds. Corporate bonds are pretty safe. You invest in a nice, safe company like a blue chip company, you'll make above inflation interest rates. Maybe not the actual inflation, but at least the CPI. You'll make above CPI interest. There's also TIPS, which are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. These are bonds. These are government bonds that adjust based on the CPI, which again isn't the true inflation rate, but it's better than nothing. But you can't sell them, right? Like, they're not liquid, okay? So if you want to, so you're trading penny stocks, okay? The penny stocks are not safe at all. Any money you put into penny stock, you could lose. It can go to fucking zero. Penny stocks are dog shit. So you're basically, you're just being like a day trader. You're buying penny stocks and you're seeing what you can do. You'll gain a little, you'll lose a little. And you're basically just piddling away money. So if you want to do that, here's what I recommend doing. Here's a good thought experiment for you to do. And I have mentioned this before. So if you're sitting in cash, it's because you believe that we're in a bubble and the bubble is going to pop. But you also need to understand that the government is actively propping up the bubble. The government does not want to see the bubble pop. The government will do everything it can to prop up the bubble and keep it going as long as possible. And in the meantime, until the bubble pops, you're not making any money. So I want you to do a calculation in your head. What are the odds you give the government to succeed in 2025? Do you think, like, what likelihood would you think there's going to be a crash in 2025 versus 2026 and beyond? Like, the government is actively trying to prop up the markets. You know, the market is a bubble, but the government's propping it up, right? So how much do you trust the government? What percentage would you give your trust in the government to be? And that is the percentage you should invest. So if you think there's a 90% likelihood the government fucks up, but there's a 10% likelihood the government pulls it off, you could invest 10% of your money. And if you think it's 50-50, you can invest 50-50. But whatever percentage you give the government to succeed in their goal of propping up this bubble, you could invest that amount of money. But there's no safe way to invest in a bubble. You may think investing in penny stocks is safer than crypto or, you know, junk bonds or some, you know, shit like that. It's all risky. You could lose all your money. Now, as long as you don't use leverage, you can only lose the money you invest. So if you buy an investment, it goes to zero. You lost every penny you invested. But as long as you don't use leverage, you can only lose what you invested. If you invest $1 million and it goes to zero, you're out $1 million. If you leverage and buy an investment and it goes to zero, you not only lost $1 million, you might be on the hook for several more $1 million. And that's how you lose everything. So stay out of leverage. And only invest what you can afford to lose. And based on the money you're parking on the side, think about how likely you think the government is going to prop this bubble up going forward. So maybe you think, you know, for 2025, I mean, it's October. 2025 is effectively over. Maybe you think there's like a 75% chance the government's going to keep the markets propped up. then you can invest 75% of your money, keep 25% in cash. Now, come January 1st, you need to do another calculation. Okay, it's 2026. What's the likelihood that the government keeps his bubble propped up for the rest of the year? And you, that's the calculation you need to constantly ask yourself. If you start getting skittish, start thinking, oh, I don't know if the government's got this, you should pull your money out and put it in cash. Now, if you don't want to deal with the stress of having to constantly reevaluate what's the likelihood of the government fucking up, just stay in cash. You're not earning nothing. You're earning whatever the money markets are paying, which is about 4%. It's not nothing. And you'll sleep better. You will sleep better not investing in a bubble. But, you know, if you must invest because, you know, you got to chase that dragon or whatever, do not blame me when the markets crash. If you're betting on the government, you know, doing it right and not, you know, letting the markets fall, and you're wrong and the markets fall and you lose all your money, that was your fault. It's not my fault. I didn't tell you to do it. I'm in cash. I'm 100% in cash. I do not have a single penny invested right now because I personally do not invest in known bubbles. I've known too many people in my career who were a lot smarter than me lose everything. You saw this in the last 48 hours. You have these crypto traders who they ate, slept, and breathed crypto. They studied the charts. They've been doing this for years, right? They knew what they were doing, and they're bankrupt today. And a lot of them killed themselves. This is what I'm talking about. Am I the smartest, you know, financial guru that's ever lived? Absolutely fucking not. Absolutely not. Neither is Warren Buffett. You know, there's been plenty of financial gurus, but here's the one thing the greatest investors of all time did that was right is they never invested in bubbles. They stayed the hell away from bubbles. And yes, during the bubble, you're watching all these dipshits make money and they're laughing at you and they're pointing and talking about, oh, what a dumbass you are because I'm making all this money and you're not, tee hee. And then the bubble pops and then the people who knew what they were doing and didn't get in the bubble, they make all the money. And the people who were in the bubble laughing and pointing all that time, they lose everything. And a lot of them kill themselves. And it happens over and over again. There's always another bubble. If you know, look up old YouTube videos of like Peter Lynch. Or, you know, you look up old stuff of Warren Buffett. This is not, like, I'm not special. I didn't figure this out on my own. I'm just doing what people who know what the fuck they're talking about have always said to do. And I personally seen guys who are smarter than me, more experienced. Like, here's the thing. I don't do day trading, all right? I'm more of a strategic investor. I think in terms of like 3 to 6 months or beyond. I don't trade the charts. There are guys who they do that. Their full-time job is trading charts. And they make a lot more money than me and whatever. Like, but that's a full-time job, okay? I can kind of know where the markets are going and understand sector rotation and economic fundamentals. And I don't need to babysit a chart 24/7. I can check in like for an hour a day and get a good beat on what's going on. And that basically, you know, that's all I need to do. If you want to be a day trader, that's a full-time job. And there are guys who like they're smarter than me, more knowledgeable than me. They did this shit full time, knew every chart, knew every trend, kept up with all the latest articles and all the latest, you know, all these analysts. They were paying all the premium services for all the charts and the analysis and whatever. And they lost everything, everything. Because they were trying to time the market and invest during a bubble. And they thought that because they were so smart and had all this information that they would be able to get out before it was too late and, you know, and time the market and all this other shit. A perfect example of this is Michael Burry. Michael Burry correctly timed the housing bubble, made a lot of money. They even made a movie about it called The Big Short. That's about Michael Burry timing the housing bubble. He's been trying to time the AI crypto bubble for years, and he's lost millions of dollars. This is Michael Burry, the guy who correctly timed the housing bubble. He's a doctor. He's a famous investor. He's a huge portfolio manager. He can't even time the market. He can't even figure out how to make money during this bubble. So, like, I'm just humble enough to admit that I'm not smarter than these people who can't do it. I'm not special, and neither are you. You can't time the market. You can't play in a bubble and get out. Like, if you do, if you happen to invest and get out before the bubble bursts perfectly, that was sheer luck. You basically just won the lottery. There's no skill. You just happened to be lucky and you won the lottery. Congratulations. But, you know, like, I don't play the lottery. I don't want to play the lottery. You know, I want to make money safely and predictably. And it's not like when the markets are allowed to work, making money safely and predictably is retardedly easy. Understanding basic fundamentals of economics, understanding like where interest rates are, inflation, and the geopolitical situation, shockingly easy. The only time I lose money is when the fucking government is lying and pissing me off and stealing my money. And even if at the time it sounds like I'm just coping and seething because I lost money, I'm always vindicated. It might take a couple years. It might take another administration admitting, oh yeah, Biden was lying about everything. Like, yeah, I fucking know. I know. I was there. I was calling it as it was happening. It didn't stop me from losing money, but I knew that that was bullshit. I know what I'm fucking being lied to. My money's being stolen. But it's the government. What can you do? If the government is basically putting their thumb on the scales of the market for political or geopolitical reasons, there's not a lot an investor can do other than leave. Leave. Do not stay in the rigged casino. Because now you have political insiders who are trading on this inside information and stealing investors' money. Like, there's been all these things about these guys who opened up these short positions 30 minutes before Trump made his announcement. You know, a guy opens an account, puts in like a shorts, you know, crypto, makes like tens of millions of dollars in an hour, and then closes his account. Like, I guarantee you that was a political insider. So, you know, you might think, oh, I'm going to bet with the government. The government's not going to fuck me. The government's going to fuck you. People in the government are going to fuck you. They're going to use their inside information to fuck you. Because in the game, this bubble game, there's no additional money. There's no wealth being created. All right. It's like when you're sitting at a game of poker. Nobody's creating wealth. The whole game of poker is you're taking the other player's money. There's no wealth being generated. There's no wealth being generated in this bubble. This shit going on with the fucking AI circle jerk. There's no wealth being created. It's all these companies agreeing to invest in each other to prop up their stock price in order to give themselves money to invest in each other with money that doesn't exist. There's no money. There's no money. It's all fake and gay. It's all fraud. If the government wasn't actively encouraging this, there would be investigations. The regulators would be, you know, dragging people into a courtroom, or there'd be house investigations. But because the government is enabling and blessing this, there's just fucking fraud in broad daylight. But how sustainable is that? You really want to bet on just outright fraud and bubbles and rug pulls? That's your plan? So look, I know it sucks making 4%. I'm not happy sitting in cash for this long. It has destroyed my business. I've lost most of my clients, and I don't blame them. Like, are you really going to pay someone to manage your money if they're just going to have you sit in cash and do nothing for years? I wouldn't. I get why they left. It just fucking sucks. But here's the thing. I have to give them like the advice I would give like myself or a loved family member. I'm not going to fucking put them in something just to make a commission off them. I'm not going to, like, I can't in good conscience tell them to invest during a bubble. They're going to lose all their money. So, but it's been hurting me directly, and it sucks. It really pisses me off. I'm just waiting for it to end, and yet they keep doubling down. They keep fucking doubling down on this shit. Like, I didn't think they were going to keep energy prices manipulated this long because it would kill the petrodollar and it would drive OPEC into bricks. And I'm like, surely they wouldn't do that. That would be fucking retarded. That's exactly what they did. And OPEC joined bricks and the petrodollar died. Why did they do that? I don't know. Manipulating energy to fucking buy Biden time for the election was just that important, I guess. And here we are, kicking the can down the road more, propping up this bubble even more. It's fucking insanity. And yet here we are. And here I am, sitting in cash, just waiting for the fucking bubble to pop as the government keeps reinflating it. How long will this go on? I don't know. It, like, you saw what happened in the last 48 hours. It could pop at any time. It, you know, like, sure, you know, the government's going to prop this up as much as possible, but, like, they're basically fucked. They can't win. They can't win on any front. They're losing everywhere. They might be able to take out Venezuela and hope that it somehow helps them regain the momentum. That's kind of it. They don't really have any other anything that they can move in on. They're basically hemmed in. So anyway, yeah, there you go. So that's my genuine heartfelt advice to you is, you know, I'm in cash. That's where I am. Take that for what it's worth. If you must invest your money, you need to realize you're investing in a bubble and you're betting on the government keeping this propped up with fraud. So ask yourself, how much do you trust the government to keep this bubble propped up with fraud? And invest that percentage of your money in whatever. But like penny stocks, like you might as well just fucking put your shit in crypto at that point. Like penny stocks, junk bonds, shit like that, meme stocks, like... What you're doing is you're thinking, okay, if I only invest a little bit of money in a bunch of crazy bullshit, one of them's bound to come in. But here's the thing you need to understand. Like, let's say you keep 99% of your money in cash, but you invest 1% in some crazy bullshit, and it goes up 100x. You make 100 bagger, huge, like, payday. You make a fucking, you know, 10,000% gains. Amazing. But it was only on 1% of your portfolio. It's not really even going to make a difference. So you're taking all this risk. You're going to lose all this sleep. You're giving yourself this part-time job to manage your risky portfolio. But because it's only going to be a small percentage of your portfolio, it's not even going to make much of a difference. You're probably going to lose the money anyway. But even if you fucking if your ship comes in and you make a whole bunch of money in that 1% of your portfolio, it's going to be such an insignificant amount at the end of the day. It's not even worth the stress. So just think about it. If you really need to invest in something, the best thing I can advise, which is safe and relative, it's not liquid, but it's safe, that would be corporate bonds. Corporate, not government bonds. If you want to invest in tips, they're not the worst for stagflation, but you need to understand they're based on the CPI. Corporate bond is not a bad investment. Corporations have to pay higher rates than the government. So you're beating the, you know, what the government bonds are paying. And, you know, government bonds are paying not a bad rate of return. So corporate bonds are going to be paying higher than that. Just make sure you're buying corporate bonds of a good, reputable company, a good blue chip company. Don't buy, you know, corporate bonds of, like, you know, a company that's, you know, in financial problems. You want to find, like, a good blue chip company that's, you know, stood the test of time, something like a Walmart or shit like that, that's not going to go bankrupt, and that you should be all right. And you'll make a higher interest rate than you will in money markets. It's not exactly liquid, but, you know, there you go. That's, and then you could put your money in that for like the next 6 months. You could buy 6 month bonds or some shit like that. And you're going to be, you have very little risk of losing money on that, especially if you hold them to maturity. You just hold the bond till maturity. Even if the bond market shits the bed, that doesn't affect you. You're going to make that interest rate regardless. You lose liquidity. Any money stuck in this bond ladder isn't going to be available if the crash happens. You're not going to be able to buy things at the bottom, essentially. But that's it. Look, at the end of the day, I'm not going to tell you what to do with your money. Okay? You need to make your own financial decisions. I've told you what I'm going to do. I've told you what I am doing. If you need to invest in anything, look into corporate bond ladders. That's about all I can say. That's all I can really do. We're in a bubble that's being propped up with fraud. I don't know how much longer this is going to go. So, you know, take that into due consideration before you go throwing your money at anything. But I get your frustration. I completely understand your frustration. I'm frustrated too. Believe me, because not only am I not making money, my business is suffering. So I'm losing income from my business in addition to my investable assets not moving. So I'm getting fucked twice. So, you know, but I'm still sitting in cash. So just, you know, take that into consideration.
All right. Okay, our one super chat. I don't know if this will play or not. I'm going to hit play and see if this works. Oh, shit, it actually works. Excellent.
Foreigner donated $5. TFM, what does it mean to be an American? To me, as a foreigner working on my naturalization, it seems American has lost its meaning as the years have progressed. Or am I crazy? Recently watched a video by Legion of Men on YouTube called Hyphenated Americans Will Be the End of America. Fun fact, he might watch you. He mentioned the net taxpayer system. Maybe you can play the video on your stream? It's about 26-11 minutes long, if that's okay.
No, I'm not going to play it, but I appreciate the shout out if that guy is a viewer. Or at least, here's the thing, he may not even be aware of me. But that's the beauty. As long as you don't insist on taking credit, if you encourage other people to adopt your ideas and spread them and take credit for it themselves, they will. And all I care about is the idea spreading. So I'm really glad that the net taxpayer idea has spread and, you know, not exactly gone viral, but it's good to see it referenced. That's great. That makes me a proud papa. Anyway, what does it mean to be an American? So due to progressivism and the dilution of America, like America is a country with its own culture, with its own people, with its own history. So what is a nation? It's really fucking simple. We call, like, now we have this word called ethnostate, which didn't exist like 50 years ago. It's a made up word. The word we use for ethnostate is nation. Nation. That's the word. Like, what is a nation? It's really not that hard. A nation is a people with a shared language, culture, and history. That's a nation. And, you know, when you're an immigrant and you're coming to America and you're not assimilating, you're not coming to become American. Like, this is the problem. America is no longer a place where people come to become American. They come to America for the welfare and the jobs. They come here to mooch off of our welfare system, and because, like, you know, there's work here and they can make a better living here than the country they came from. But they continue to fly like the Mexican flag or whatever fucking country they're from, and they never assimilate. They don't even learn the language. There are people who are, like, you know, from South America who've lived in America for generations. They still don't speak English. And they simply turn parts of America into Mexico. There are towns in, like, southwestern America where all the billboards are in Spanish. Everybody speaks Spanish. Everybody flies their Mexican flag. And this is within America. So when you have a country that lets people move in without assimilating, without learning the language, you don't even insist on anything. You celebrate diversity. Then being an American citizen means jack fucking shit. All citizenship means is you can legally work here and collect welfare, which for the most people, that's all they want. They just want to work here and collect welfare. However, if you want to become an American, not just an American citizen, not just a hyphenated American, you want to become an American, that requires you to share in the history, the language, the culture of America. That requires assimilation. Like, for example, you see, like, I've seen people who, like, this is very true of Native Americans, but less true of Hispanics, but more true of Native Americans. There are Native American tribes that you wouldn't even guess they were Native Americans. They just look white. You know, during the summer, they might tan, but they're white for all intents and purposes. And a lot of them, they're only, like, you know, 50% Native American anyway. But you wouldn't even guess. Like, they don't act Native American. They don't dress Native American. They're just white people who happen to be part Native American. And there's a lot of Hispanics who are the same way. They're Hispanic. You know, they may have come from Mexico or some South American country generations ago, but they're, like, you know, half white or whatever. And they speak English. They dress American. They don't wave a Mexican flag and say Viva la Raza. They wave American flags. And for all intents and purposes, you would look at them and you just assume they were white. You'd assume they were white, and that would be that. And that's what America is. Like, America was originally a white nation. It's in the fucking documents of it's supposed to be a nation of free white men. That's not my opinion. That's the founding fathers. So it was started as a Protestant white nation. But then there was this concept of the melting pot. Now, melting pot is an interesting concept because when you add something to a melting pot, it loses its individuality. It might add its, you know, when you have a melting pot and you add something to the melting pot, it infuses the whole melting pot with its essence, but it also loses its individuality. You become one with the melting pot. And this is, America is a melting pot. So for example, we have like Cracker Barrel. This is a fun fact you may not realize. Cracker Barrel. People think of Cracker Barrel, it's old country food. You know, you got like a lot of Thanksgiving dishes, you know, turkey and biscuits and corn and all that shit. Did you know all of that is Native American? I know it sounds kind of obvious, like Thanksgiving food is Native American, but if you look up Native American dishes, like, because I was actually curious one day, what, like, because you never see Native American restaurants. You see Mexican, Chinese food, but you never see Native American food. So you look up what are Native American dishes. It's all Thanksgiving food. And it sounds obvious when you think about it, but we don't even think of Native American food as Native American food. It's just American country food. Native American culture has melted into American culture. Turkey and cranberries and all that Thanksgiving shit, that's Native American culture, but it's become synonymous with American culture. It's melted into the melting pot, and it's now just part of American culture. We have what's called Tex-Mex, which is a fusion of American and Mexican cuisine. And it's its own thing. Tex-Mex is not the same as Mexican. There's Mexican food and there's Tex-Mex. Tex-Mex is a lot more cheese and a lot more meat. But the point is like that's the melting pot. The melting pot is people come to America, whether they're Mexican or Native American. I know the Native Americans were already here, but you know what I'm talking about. Like people who are not white melt into the American melting pot. And they infuse their culture and traditions into the American melting pot, and it spreads and diffuses throughout America. So now you have Tex-Mex and you have Cracker Barrel, and nobody thinks of them as ethnic. It's just American food. What's the most American food of all? The cheeseburger. That's German. Burgers are from Germany, and most Americans are of German descent. Like, I know that the original colonies were English, but most Americans are ethnically German by descent. And the burger, which is the quintessential American dish, is German. We get our traditions. In fact, our sausage tradition comes from German sausage, German and Italian, as opposed to English. English sausage is kind of shit, if I'm being very honest. So my point is, but we don't think of a cheeseburger as German. Cheeseburgers are American. You know, like the enchilada, you know, you go to Tex-Mex. That's just American Mexican food, right? You know, Cracker Barrel isn't Native American food. It's American food. All these things are just American, but they're part of this shared tradition of different ethnic groups that assimilate. This thing, they assimilated. They spoke English. They intermarried and everybody, you know, their cultures blended together. That's what the melting pot was. Starting with the Progressive Era, well, not really so much the beginning of the Progressive Era. We're talking like the 1960s, kind of in the midst of the Cold War. That's where this whole idea of diversity came in, where we no longer demand that people assimilate. When you come to America, you don't need to speak English. You should be able to keep your foreign non-American culture and form a little enclave. And this is primarily spearheaded by Jews. I'll be fucking honest here. Jews notoriously refuse to assimilate. It's why they always get kicked out of countries. It's the primary reason. It's part of their culture. They do not assimilate. It's their whole thing. Now, to make it easier because obviously when people live in your country and refuse to assimilate, it breeds resentment. So because Jews don't want to assimilate, one of the things they did was they encouraged the idea that no one should assimilate. So it wasn't just Jews doing it. Like if nobody was assimilating, then Jews weren't unique. No one was assimilating. Everybody was forming little racial enclaves. And that's a good thing. We're celebrating diversity. We got our Jewish enclave, our Somalian enclave, our Indian enclave. It's so diverse. It's so wonderful. And the problem is now, you know, back to your question, you're trying to become a naturalized citizen. You're wondering what it means to be American. It doesn't mean anything. It hasn't meant anything since like second wave feminism in the 60s with this bullshit of not having to assimilate, embracing diversity, encouraging hyphenated Americans. But before that, when immigrants did assimilate, America was a unique culture. It had diversity. You had different people, but everyone assimilated, and what they brought from their home cultures blended into the whole. And you don't have that anymore. You don't have Tex-Mex. I mean, you still have Tex-Mex, but now you just have straight up fucking Mexican towns where everybody speaks Spanish and waves Mexican flags. And it's like just another part of Mexico. And they celebrate that. They celebrate that they're taking back America for Mexico, a country they refuse to live in because it fucking sucks. But they somehow want to steal American land and give it back to Mexico for some reason. Now, this is unsustainable, and it's all essentially driven by Jewish interests. Well, I think what Israel's done, I think Israel's kind of let the mask fall off a little bit too greedily, and they fucked up, and I think anti-Semitism is irrevocably rising. And so a lot of the things that Jews have instilled into America for their own benefit is probably going to go away. In the not too distant future. And then you will see a renewed interest in forced assimilation. That sounds bad. Forced assimilation sounds bad. But it's what every other country in the world does. Every other country. If you go to Mexico and you don't speak Spanish, nobody is going to fucking hold your hand. Unless you're rich and you're in the touristy areas and they recognize you're a tourist. Yeah, they'll work with you. But, you know, they don't expect everyone to speak Spanish. But if you live there and you move there and you want to work there and you don't speak fucking Spanish in Mexico, you're going to have a bad time. You're expected to assimilate to Mexico. You're expected to assimilate everywhere else in the world other than America. Or, I mean, you probably to a lesser degree, you know, Britain and other Western countries, basically white countries. Every non-white country expects you to assimilate if you want to live there. And now, why do the white countries? It's because of Jews. Let's be real honest here. It's because Jews didn't want to assimilate. They're the ones who kind of foster this climate of non-assimilation. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. So it is what it is. What can you do? It's going to end. And America, like, what culture emerges? Like, because here's the thing. Once all is said and done, America is still going to be basically hollowed out from, you know, 100 years of progressivism, feminism, various Marxist waves of bullshit. It's going to, like, America will be changed. Whatever is rebuilt after the war isn't going to be what existed before. You know, whatever America emerges from the ashes is not going to be an exact replica of what used to be, because, you know, war changes you. And, you know, there's going to be other, like the Indians, a lot of them will go away. Some of them won't. Indians are going to, you know, these Africans, they're definitely not going to go back to Africa unless you force them to at gunpoint. So they're going to be here to stay unless you forcibly kick them out. But when there is renewed emphasis on assimilation, when they force all these immigrants to learn English and break up their little enclaves, that's going to affect the melting pot. You're going to see Indian culture and Somalian culture and all these other immigrant groups blend into the whole, just like Native American, Hispanics, German, all these other ethnic groups blended into the whole. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I don't know. That's probably going to happen, though. There's probably going to be a renewed push for integration and assimilation, because that's what every other country in the history of the world has always done until very recently in only white countries. So just expect that. But right now, we're still living in like that this era
of celebrating diversity and bullshit. So yes, to answer your question, being an American means nothing. Being an American citizen means jack fucking shit. American culture means nothing because there's no expectation for you to assimilate or adopt that culture to be here. But that will change. It has to change. Otherwise, the country will cease to exist. Because eventually, if you don't make people assimilate, if you let people balkanize into enclaves, you eventually are going to have the country shake apart. When the welfare runs out, when the government can't afford all the debt it's paying, and it's basically what's it called? Dearborn, Michigan, which is full of Somalians, they have absolutely nothing in common with these other immigrant groups and other ethnicities throughout the rest of the country. Nothing. So when push comes to shove, they're just going to form their own little micro country. And so is every other group. The only way to have a cohesive nation is to have a shared language and culture and history, period. Otherwise, you're just inviting balkanization and civil war. Every other country in the history of the world knew this. This is why Jews got kicked out of so many countries, because they refused to assimilate. Now that Israel exists, assuming Israel can cut a deal to maintain its longevity, Jews can just go live in Israel. In fact, even Halsey says that's what's going to happen. He fully expects anti-Semitism to go up and for the Jews to be sent to Israel. That's fine. At least the Jews have somewhere to go. They can go to Israel and do whatever, right? So once the Jews are basically kicked out of the West and sent to Israel, everyone else is going to be forced to assimilate. And if you don't want to assimilate, you can get the fuck out. And the Jews will leave because they don't want to assimilate. So whatever. Other people from shitty countries, like people probably aren't going to want to go back to Africa or India, and they're going to be forced to assimilate. You want to stay here, learn English, stop shitting in the street, and, you know, assimilate, period, or get the fuck out. That's not a bad thing. That's a very, very necessary thing to have a country. So just expect that. So again, right now, it doesn't mean anything. Right now, we're living in like the twilight of this failed diversity bullshit, but this is on its way out. All right, the regime is on borrowed time, and when it falls, we're gonna have to rebuild all of this from the ground up, and we're gonna decide once and for all what nation we want to have. And you know, we can celebrate diversity and all that, but there's gonna have to be assimilation. You can't have a country of various little fucking enclaves. Doesn't work. So look forward to that. But yeah, that's about it. Okay, that was our only super chat because, again, I am not streaming. I'm just recording. So there you go. All right, so we got our one super chat out of the way. I answered the super chats that I missed the last stream. And there we go. We talked about what we were going to talk about. Again, since I'm not making any money on this stream other than that one super chat, so I technically made $5. Please consider supporting me by subscribing to the Monkey's Market Minute by giving me $5 over on Subscribestar or GiveSendBro. That just helps me out. And, you know, in times like this where I'm basically doing stuff for free, because, you know, it is what it is. It's okay. You know, hopefully next week shit works. We'll see. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Please consider supporting me on Subscribestar and GiveSendBro. Thank you to our sponsors. Again, I don't have... The sponsors are incorrect. Let me go back to the TFM show. So anyway, our sponsors are The Dollhouse, Era Venus, MetWeb, Revy Consulting, and SpinningRobotPussy.com. That's going to be it for me. So I appreciate you guys... watching. Sorry we couldn't stream. Hopefully everything works next week. Until then, I'll see you and enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I'll see you next time. Take care.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
War never changes. In the current year, women have declared war on men. Men are not only guilty until proven innocent, but they are not even allowed to prove their innocence. In response to this warfare waged by women, known as feminism, men have sought refuge with waifus. Artificial women able to satisfy a man's need for love and sex. Retailers like the Dollhouse began to spread, bringing waifus to men everywhere, freeing them from the enslavement of feminism. Get your waifu today from thedollhouse.com or dc.dollhouse.com if you're in the United States, before they're banned by feminism so they can control men once more. Go to thedollhouse.com and dcdollhouse.com to find your waifu today before it's too late.
From the dawn of time, mankind has looked up into the stars and asked a single question: why can't I get some pussy spinning at 300 RPM? The future is now, and our Lord and Savior has answered our silent prayers. We have the world's first sex doll insertable spinning robot pussy. You can now bring your waifu to life to bring sex to regions unexplored. Go boldly where no man has gone before. Spinning robot pussy is the best pussy you'll ever have, and that's a fact. Does your meatbag girlfriend's pussy spin at 330 RPM? No. No, it doesn't. Go to spinningrobotpussy.com/TFM for a discount of up to $100 for a limited time. That's spinningrobotpussy.com/TFM. What are you waiting for? The future is now.
Revy from Revy Innovations, creator of the spinning robot pussy. He is offering his services in business and technology consulting to the MGTOW community. He's an engineer specializing in robotics and automation. He's worked in military research, biomedical, and the space industry. He holds a master's and a PhD from two of the top universities in the U.S., but he wants to help the MGTOW community and those with a similar background to reach their full potential. So he's launched Revy Consulting, and he offers services such as tech career consulting, academic career consulting, and tech startup idea evaluation / design roadmap. He's very experienced in all of these fields, and he wants to offer his services to the community at a very reduced rate to try to help his brothers also find success in their chosen profession as well. Interested? Contact Revy at the email on the screen. Set up an appointment from someone who's a veteran in the industry who can help you achieve success as well.
Thank you.